Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Exploring our oneness with spirit and each other. Unity Online Radio.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Souk Harbor on Vancouver Island in British Columbia. This is the eighth show in our 10-week series of World Spirituality on the Road. And I'm joined, as usual, by my wife, Wendy. Hi, Wendy.
Hello. It's good to be here.
Yeah, great to be here in the beautiful part of the world. And, you know, part of our 10-week sabbatical has been reviewing certain things. For instance, 30 years in ministry, and reflecting also on my turning 65 and examining what the rest of my life looks like. And I know there's a lot of people who are in the same situation or approaching that. And it's there's always times in our lives where we take stock and begin to review, you know, where we've been, where we're going, what's the next thing for us to do. And it's interesting, we've come up to quite a few situations and people that have given insight into these themes of review and examination. And it's funny how that happens, isn't it? It's that synchronicity. You're attracted to the people that have something to tell you, or you have something to tell them, perhaps. None more dramatically, though, than an experience we had a couple of days ago on the beach down here in British Columbia. And it was on China Beach. And by the way, if you've never been up to this part of the world, I can highly recommend it. It's glorious here. And the weather has been very nice. It's wonderful to look over at the Olympic Peninsula and enjoy the waters here. They're so pure. We've seen a lot of whales and other wildlife. It's just very relaxing. Anyway, as I was saying, on the beach, in China Beach, we'd taken a little lie down, relaxing, just chatting and listening to the waves. And we got up, and there was a man coming towards us, and he said hi. And then he initiated a quite a long conversation, and he said, "Do you mind if I interrupt you for a minute? I've got a question for you." I thought, okay, this is interesting. You know, he seemed like a very well-dressed man, and didn't look like he was looking for anything in the sense of, you know, something nefarious, but just was interested in our thoughts. And it turned out he was 64. He'd lived all his life on the prairies in Saskatchewan. He was a rancher and in his younger day, a rodeo person, and he still wore the outfit. He looked like somebody from Texas, actually. He had his jeans on and his belt buckle with his rodeo wins. And little shirt there, cowboy shirt, and looked the part. And anyway, he lived all his life there, and his current girlfriend had moved from Saskatchewan to the Souk area, and or Victoria area, and was inviting him to come be with her. And he wasn't sure he could leave everything behind. You know, he was asking, "What does it take to let go? How is it wise to do that? What becomes of your previous life when your identity shifts. And so he was musing on this as he was walking up and down the beach, which, of course, is a good place to muse, isn't it, and contemplate. But even so, it's hard to know what's the right thing to do. So we had a chat about it, and it's, you know, we felt after he'd walked away, we felt, you know, did he appear for himself or for us? Because the very questions that he was asking of himself were questions we'd asked ourselves on this trip. And I thought, was he real even, or was he just a dream that showed up and then came and went? But it was a very interesting conversation. He shook our hands at the end and went on his way. So I hope we gave him some reasonable advice. And the advice we gave him was to follow your heart, you know, and to risk. Because I don't think anything's gained unless you risk. Sometimes we stay in the comfort zone of what we know and not realizing that there's a whole other world out there. And at one point he did say, he said, you know, there's a world of possibility that you can't know about if you're in your own little box. And you know, the world is larger than we think it is. And I thought, you know, that's an excellent insight, because we stay comfortable, but we stay kind of numb if we're not careful. But I think the question of identity is interesting. We're going to talk about that on the show today. Self-esteem, identity, who we are. You know, who are we without our roles? If you've been a minister like I have for 30 years, it defines you in a way. If you're a father or a mother or a child or any other relationship or role, you know, what are you when you go beyond the need for that relationship? And you might say, well, we'll always be a father or a mother, but it shifts, doesn't it, as our children grow and they don't need us in the way they did when they were younger. You know, how does that role shift? How do we let go of being so close to them and letting them be their own person? They have their own life to live. It's that empty nest syndrome. So, Wendy, what was your take on our friend showing up out of the blue?
Well, it was. It seemed very mystical. Like Paul said, we looked at each other sort of and said, was that a dream? Of course, we could still see him walking away from us, but you know, I think one of the key things here was that he was so identified, his clothing. I mean, he announced who he was by his clothing. So it was like we both knew that his identity was ingrained in him. And, you know, it's difficult to maybe see that, who we are and what identity we have ingrained in ourselves, what little small box we have put ourselves into, until you ask somebody else or until you ponder it. But we talked a lot with him about his identity and whether he could expand that and make it into something else, and that comfort zone about, you know, you have all the garb, you have all the trappings around you. That's what we do. We gather close to things that make us feel secure, at least make our ego feel secure. But then if you go into that larger world, then it seems chaotic because those things might not work anymore. They might not be fitting to have rodeo cowboy clothes on a beach. So then you have to reexamine yourself. You have to reexamine the things that you've gathered close around you, your little fortress, and see if they're applicable still.
Yeah, very good. And you know, he's definitely a very nice man. That's one thing. Intelligent. He'd been thinking about these things. So he was musing. But I noticed something about him, and that is he had a little bit of the yes buts going. So he understood all the angles, but was still hedging his bets. And I think sometimes we get into that mode. You know, we probably know the answers. We know what needs to be done, and yet we sabotage ourselves. We say, yeah, but what happens if that doesn't work? And so our mind sabotages our higher aspirations sometimes, and that's a difficult one, because the mind says, it's almost like the adult or something, or the parent, I should say, that says, oh, now we've got to be sensible, you know. And we don't want that little child running off and doing things it might find dangerous, or it's not going to work out. But, of course, you know, the child has to grow into the adult, and it can only do that if it risks, if it leaves the nest, and that is inherently dangerous to a degree, right? That there's that sense of flying alone, and so I've noticed that in some parts of my life. You know, it's easy for my parents, the parental part of me, to keep me stuck, but the child has to fly.
And it reminds me of Roger Thiel in one of his books, saying that the ego wants security and spirit offers assurity. And I've kept that with me a lot to ask myself, is this little niggling fear, is this because my ego is scared, or is it because spirit is nudging me a different way?
Right, very good. If you're not familiar with Roger Thiel, Roger Thiel's the minister of the Mile High Church in Denver, Colorado, one of the biggest New Thought churches in the world. And he's written a wonderful book called This Life is Joy. And in that book, he does talk about the difference between security and assurance, and the idea that we are assured a wonderful life of mystery and possibility, but it's not a secure life. You know, we're not sure what might happen. Storms may come, as they are now in parts of our world. Downsides can come. Loved ones can die. Whatever. There's no guarantee of security, but the assurance is that in the midst of all that, there is still the flow of God's good, or Spirit's good, or whatever name you want to call that presence. And this is not a platitude. It's not that sugarcoat the bad times with that idea, but it's saying that it's very much a reality. We are always surrounded. We live, move, and have our being in that endless flow. And that's been something that I've noticed a lot, because we've been around the sea in most of the sabbatical, because we've chosen to be close to the sea because we both love it. But watching the rhythms of the waves and the tides and the flow of everything reminds us that we have the same flow within our own bodies and minds, the flow of our blood and all the processes of our being are in constant flow. There's an assurance that that's going to be okay. The life-giving air of, that we breathe in every moment, whether we're aware of it or not, allows us the assurance that we are sustained. And that's going to happen regardless of our thoughts about it, you know, because there's a deeper level of understanding beyond our thinking.
I think I was contemplating this just the other day when I was actually doing my exercises and stretching, and I thought about that there is that still point, and I think there was a daily word about it just recently too. There is that still point that is deep within us that is recognizable. It's touchable. You can reach it, and it's like a tiny little dewdrop of medicine that is can overwhelm your sense of being and bring it into a peaceful point just by visiting it for a split second. And I think that's a skill that can be honed by all of us. Everybody has the opportunity to do that and the choice to do that.
Yeah, very good. You know, talking about themes of synchronicity and allowing, which is what Wendy's talking about there, I find it interesting that things pop up into my life that reinforce where I'm already contemplating. And last night, Kelly Burdick, who's a member of our community in Fort Worth and one of our prayer chaplains, put up a post asking if life is random or full of reason. Are there reasons for everything, or is it just random? And are these things mutually exclusive, or is it possible for the two to dwell together? And my response to him was that they are both happening at the same time, you know, that on this journey through the infinity of what life is, with all its endless possibilities, life is both random and full of meaning and reason, because we choose, in a sense, our journey. And yet, at the same time, you know, the journey is only apparent. It's not the ultimate reality. We are that which is beyond any movement or time or change. And in that, there is no reason or random. There is simply being, being what is. And that may sound abstruse, but I think it's very real. If you've done a lot of meditation or you're approaching those places in consciousness, not just an intellectual, philosophical nicety, it's the truth of our being, that there's a natural state. It's interesting. I know a lot of teachers talk about the natural state. If you study Tibetan Buddhism, they call it natural great perfection. It's natural. Sri Nagasadatta Maharaj, the great saint of Bombay, wrote the book I Am That, and his way was the natural way. And I like that. You know, it's natural. We are that. We are that natural grace, if we can allow ourselves to be. It's just our thinking gets in the way sometimes. Wendy doesn't have a comment on that because she's moved into the silence.
No, I didn't. You know, well, no, I mean, I think that it was interesting because, I mean, I'm not as well studied as Paul, but I came to the same conclusion that he did, that when I first heard first started thinking about, it was almost like a duality, the reason and the...
And random.
It was like moving into that world of duality where if you don't work, if you just decide not to think that way and think another way, you can see that everything is just as it is. It doesn't have to be anything more. And at the same point in time, it is more if you let go of the parameters that you've put on it.
Right. Yeah. And you know, we also notice that the patterns repeat, don't they, in nature? The beautiful seashells that conform to so many beautiful mathematical patterns are mirrored in the movement of the stars or the planets or whatever. And you look at a creek coming down across the beach, and it's forming canyons in miniature on the sand, just like the canyons you might find on big mountain systems. So things are repeated. The same flow in our own bodies are mirrored elsewhere in nature. I took a photo of an old tree stump that had been on the beach forever, and it was whitened with age and with the elements, and it looked just like stone. And so it was sculptured just like a piece of stone. And after a while, you looked at it and thought, wait a minute, is this actually a tree? Is it a living thing that's grew, or is it another kind of living thing that just exists in geologic time? But they were both very, very similar. So there's, again, a commonality. So there's a pattern to everything which presupposes some kind of reason. And yet the profligate nature of things means that there's so many things happening at any given time, it has to be random. So both ends, you know, the interpenetrating and giving us that infinite possibility. So if you put it in practical terms, you know, you are unlimited beings. We are unlimited beings of infinite possibility. And so don't sell yourself short. You know, you can have anything you want. The law of attraction sort of touches on this, but I don't think it really goes as deep as the deeper law is, actually. But it certainly touches on the same idea, and that is that we create our own reality in a very meaningful way. How does that meaning and reason versus random? Claim your good.
I was thinking when you were talking earlier and just a minute ago about the experience I had while we were in the Outer Hebrides and about identity I said this on the show when we were out there that Paul and I had to do laundry and they had a clothesline and it was out in these wildflowers. It's out in the wilds and just this a rolling landscape with the sea in the background, and it's just this rolling landscape of wildflowers as far as you can see. And we walked out there through the flowers to to put the laundry up and not being used to using the clothesline probably maybe once or twice in my whole entire lifetime, even though I don't use the dryer at home. I use a clothes rack to dry my clothes. I hadn't used the clothesline, and it was like this brand new experience, like melted away my identity of who I was. I wasn't a mother. I wasn't a wife. I wasn't anybody. I wasn't the person that I knew. I was just this being that was doing this task that was completely new. And the reason why I was thinking of this is because it's like breaking away the barrier, taking away that outer crust or that outer shell, and like washing it away so that you feel something different than not just experience, but feel something. I mean, obviously, I was still a mother, still a wife, still Wendy, but I had this complete different feeling, but because I was doing something completely new, and I just allowed the task to be a portal into that other world, of the portal into something bigger. So then from that point, I've been able to re-examine things, like I said, the outer crust of me, to see if it's applicable anymore.
Yeah, very good. So that brings us to the theme that we wanted to look at a little bit today, and that is the idea of who am I, what does it mean to be me, and what does it mean to have self-esteem, you know, because the old truism is you've got to be somebody before you can be nobody, right? You have to have a good, healthy ego before you can let go of your ego, because if you let go of ego too soon, if you try and do too much spiritual violence, as Jesus said, you know, trying to enter the kingdom of heaven with violence and storm, sometimes we make a mess of ourselves. So we can't let things go until we have a good understanding of what we're letting go. And hence spiritual practice is so important in that regard, because the spiritual path can be dangerous if we're playing around with forces that we don't understand. It's okay to have an ego as long as you realize it's provisional, right? It's not the reality of who we are. What do you think, Wendy?
Well, I think one of the things that, back to how our thoughts are processed, was that we started talking about self-esteem because we were examining and found it interesting that you hear a piece of news and you think, oh, wow, pat myself on the back, and wow, I feel really good. And then you hear, you know, somebody maybe that doesn't think the same way that you think, and you start maybe wondering about yourself, and all of a sudden that self-esteem sort of kind of shifts a different way. And they both seem so, both concepts seem so concrete in your mind, in our minds, as we're thinking them. It's like, oh yeah, I'm a great, yes, I can do good, and I'm, you know, on down the road, and just something so slightly can shift your energy off center, and you're thinking, oh well, maybe I need to work on that a little bit more. Or you're not feeling quite as good. And both times, if you examine the thought and the feeling behind the thought, is that it seems such a concrete, but you're not either.
Right. What was it? Rudyard Kipling said, you know, to meet with triumph and disaster and see them both as imposters, right? That they're neither what they say they are, and neither is something else. You know, it's okay to enjoy the good times and feel bad about the bad times. You can't not be human as long as you realize that they're not what they seem, and there is a still center at the heart beyond triumphs and disasters in our lives, beyond being lifted up and being pulled down.
Yeah, and I think the important part is that you're not either. That even though it seems at the time that you're not either, because it can just shift and change so easily. And I think that because we all have a self-esteem, we all have an ego, that we can all relate to that experience that I just described, that we can relate to that. And so then if you broaden that sense into a deeper spirituality, into a deeper meaning, then your eyes, your perception, your feelings, you realize can be shifted around, and that maybe what you what you know and what you see is not what you really, what is, that it can be shifted to something else. And, you know, I personally think that it can be guided and in somewhat that you can guide it. I mean, I like doing treasure maps, and I had done one with our book study just recently, and I was sort of laughing because I told Paul, I said, remember we looked at my treasure map right before we left to come up to British Columbia, and I was like, look, there it is. I mean, one of the views, I mean, a picture just almost exactly what I had in my treasure map was we were looking at. And so I do think that you can guide and shift with your mind, with your attitude, and bring about things in your life that you might not think are possible today, but are possible to actually bring about in your life.
I think it was Jim Carrey that said, they'll tell the story that he was a big advocate for the law of attraction even before it became popular. And at one point he was doing a treasure map or intentional statements or vision board, whatever you want to call it, and put down that he was going to earn $10 million. And this is a time when he was very poor and was trying to get acting jobs. And I think it was 7 years later that after his career had taken off, he was handed a check for $10 million for a particular movie that he was signing on to. And he thought, there it is. There's, after 7 years of work and progression in my career, but there's the check. You know, I saw it, I visualized it, and now it's come into being. And of course, it didn't just fall into his lap. He was willing to do, you know, a lot of work and effort to achieve success. But the point is, that was part of the flow, wasn't it? It was part of the guidance. You relax into it. It's natural. But you still have to do the work, and so that's the balance of the nature of who we are. You know, we can't force it, but we definitely have to contribute to it. So, good example. Of course, Jim Carrey's in the news recently while we're recording this, going out live in September, because he said some interesting things that are. At a fashion week reception, and some of what he said was very spiritual. You know, that we're not here really; that this game we play is not the truth of who we are. But he said it in a sort of off kilter way that was a little sad. Because my feeling is, when you understand that, you know, we're not here; that there is something above and beyond who we are. We're not in our roles. We're not the reality that we think we are. Then that instills great compassion, I think, for those who are lost in that, in those times when we are lost in that. And so if we are truly understanding of that nature, then we become more compassionate to others, we're more caring. And I think that's a hallmark of a wise teacher, is that they, yes, they can be direct and forceful with people to help them wake up, but they also have an amazing amount of compassion. I think of the Buddha, think of Jesus, could be harsh sometimes, but also the underlying love was there, that sense of enfolding his flock in his tender arms. All right, we're halfway through the show. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to look at a word called disidentification. What is that? Disidentification. Join us after these messages from Unity.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
Did you know you can reach Unity's 24/7 prayer ministry online? You don't even have to give your name to know the prayers have begun for you or those you love. Someone has been praying around the clock at Silent Unity since 1890, and every request is taken into prayer for 30 days. Why not let us pray with you, too? To submit your prayer request to Silent Unity online, go to unity.org and click on prayer, or call 1-800-NOW-PRAY.
Join Unity on September 14th for World Day of Prayer as we engage with people around the globe to explore living in peace-centered consciousness. Visit worlddayofprayer.org to see how you can participate at your local Unity Center or New Thought Community, or watch the live-streamed events at Unity Village. Also join us on Facebook and Twitter, hashtag WDOP17. Wherever you are, please join us in affirming, I am peace in the midst of all matters.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
So hello, welcome back to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. This is Paul, and I'm with Wendy, my wife, and we're on a sabbatical here in Souk, British Columbia. I'm looking out of some picture windows at a beautiful scene of the ocean. We were watching whales in there a few hours ago. I don't see any right now, but there's some low clouds, and it's very beautiful. But we're talking about self-esteem and who we are. You know, you can't release who you are, the concepts of who you are, until you've got a good idea of who you aren't, in a way, because otherwise it's too precipitate to just let go. A lot of people can even have the danger of becoming mentally ill if we don't have a good sense of self. But many of the great teachers, though, do invite us to ask that question, who am I? Ramana Maharshi, the great saint of India of the 19th and 20th centuries from South India, of course, is famous for asking that question, who am I? And modern psychologists of Europe and America also invite us to ask those questions and to go on a process of a disidentification of releasing things that maybe we are provisionally, but that's not the ultimate nature of who we are, you know, because we have a body, for instance, but we're not just the body. We have a mind, we have ideas, we have egos, etc., but we are not just these things. And in fact, these are just tools by which we maneuver, but ultimately we trace it back to who am I in truth. And really, if you go deep into meditation about it, you'll begin to understand that you are the emptiness, right? I think it was Adyashanti wrote a lovely book from that perspective, Emptiness Dancing. So we are emptiness dancing. The whole universe is emptiness dancing. It's not really here in the sense that we think it is, but obviously it's here because we can touch and feel it with our sensual experience. But it is more than that. It is that with a capital T. And we are that. So you say, well, okay, great. Now, how does that help me level my life? Well, it's helped me live my life in the sense you can go anywhere and feel comfortable. When you're in that place of remembrance of who you are in truth, nothing can really intimidate you because you are beyond the usual fears and neuroses that we have about others, about our situation in the world. We can explore in a more elegant way. And, you know, I remember as a kid, I was always in awe of powerful people. You know, I was thinking, oh, what would it be like to meet the Queen growing up in Britain? Because, oh, my goodness, that would be so intimidating. Or, you know, some of us get overawed by celebrities or whatever. But I think as you recognize that we are one, you know, we are all connected. There is no separation. Then you feel more comfortable. They don't have to be overawed by others. they're struggling just as much as we are. And in fact, the great quote, you know, everybody you meet is going through a huge battle with one thing or another within us. And so we share that commonality. We also share the commonality of being that beautiful, pristine presence, which is hard to define. In fact, we can't define it. We can just be it. What do you think, Wendy?
Well, I it seems like the theme of everyone's fighting a great battle has come up with a lot of people that we've talked with in our journey, in our sabbatical, because we all are. And it's like it might not be the same battle, but we share that in common. And certainly the people that are going through displacement of home, and they're going through a real visual journey right now, and that great battle is really huge, and it might have displaced or changed the perspective of maybe another battle that they were fighting before they were fighting for shelter and what their next step is going to be as far as that shelter is concerned, for instance. And so it's a shift of there'll always be battles around for us to fight. There'll always be things, and what we think might, the fear that we think might happen, it might not be the fear that actually ends up happening in the end. So it's like, why worry about things, because you really don't know what's going to happen.
Right. And sometimes the most traumatic things that happen to us in our lives can be the ones that bring us the greatest blessing. That's what I've noticed, because they're able to shock us out of our complacency, if you like, shock us out of our comfort zone. And although we think, oh, this is a great tragedy, I've lost my home, or I've lost my wife, or I've lost something in my life that I cherished, once that's gone, you realize I'm still here. You know, there's still life going on. The flow continues. Maybe that wasn't my reality. And so, of course, we're not trying to lessen the terror and the sadness of great loss, and certainly not in times of, you know, when there's been massive storms that are dislocating life for people. But there's an opportunity within everything, I think, is what we're saying, and that there can be freedom that comes from that sense of release from all the stuff that surrounds us. I know after extensive travel, with just a backpack, and I found it hard to go back to a house full of stuff, basically, because you realize, man, I'm accumulating all these things around me, but are they really necessary? And in preparation for this particular sabbatical time away, we moved a number of items out of our bedroom and out of my study in preparation for our guest stay in there. And they actually felt like a great release, because they'd been sitting there jumbling up my desk and filling the side tables in our bedroom for so long that you didn't realize what inconvenience they were. So it was very wonderfully freeing to let them go. In Unity, we often have rummage sales or circulation days, because we believe that, you know, moving things you don't no longer need out creates that space. Of course, new things will arrive, but sometimes they don't. Sometimes it's just the spaciousness is the feel good.
So this goes back to that word. What was the word? Disidentifying.
Disidentification.
And disidentification, and talking about the stuff around us or the crust around us. That shaving off a little bit of that, I do think makes a difference. And you know, I know that Paul's study is bookshelves from floor to ceiling, and he loves his books around him. Just absolutely loves them around him. He loves a book in any form, and he has them all around his desk, and it's. I think a lot of who he is, because he reads so much and he can unpack those things and those great gifts and of the authors and share them with the rest of the world. But at the same point in time, it can also be clutter. It can also be where there's too much of it. And so then in order to have your own space, it has to be cleared out and that crust sort of removed. I think that one day that will be removed in a book by author of Paul John Roach will appear one day.
Well, I have made a commitment that my desk at home is completely empty right now. I think there's a Welsh flag, and that's about it on it. And I intend not to put anything back on it, except maybe one picture to contemplate every so often. But we'll see how long that lasts. But it's a nice idea. But the idea of it being clear and free is expansive, too. It gives more space for ideas to flow. Maybe I need to put the books down. Yeah. One impulse from a vernal wood will teach you more of man, of moral evil and of good than all the sages can. That's a part of a poem by William Wordsworth. In that particular poem, he talks about putting down his books and put down those barren leaves, as he says. You just get involved with nature that'll give you everything you need. And interestingly, Aldous Huxley, one of his novels was called Those Barren Leaves, which he took from that particular poem. It's when we get too caught up in the printed page and identify with somebody else's knowledge rather than relying on our own innate knowledge, right, which is always available. So part of disidentification is disidentifying from the sense that we don't know enough, you know, that we're not good enough, that our self-esteem is not strong, and we rely on others to tell us how it is. And I think a big part of the path is to become self-reliant, even releasing the idea that there's a guru who can answer all my problems.
And so I'm a firm believer that in divine knowledge and divine wisdom, and they are two different things to me. But we have a divine intelligence where the universe provides answers to all questions. The universe provides all things. And belief in that brings about answers to even some of the mundane things. I know I've told stories before to different people about I needed an electrician in my job, and I ended up taking my mother to Luby's cafeteria, and lo and behold, there was a table full of electricians laughing and having a good time, and he is still my electrician. So shout out to Mr. Bartow, even though he probably doesn't listen to this, but shout out to him. Anyways, the universe provides all things, and it getting in touch with that other world, that empty world, then allows the universe to give the answer, and it's something you can put your weight down on.
Very good, and I know Wendy likes that phrase, put your weight down on. You know, this universe is light and airy, but
trust.
But when we trust, then it automatically becomes firm. Does that make sense? However risky it seems to be, when we dare to step out, then it becomes firm. And it's that trust, it's that knowing that it's all going to be okay. It's a bit like jumping off the cliff and then you're given wings, you know, but the wings don't appear until you jump. But they're always going to be there because Spirit wants to provide for us. But it's a double-edged sword again, isn't it? Random or planned. It's the idea that it's both and. Until you can let go, you can't be sustained. So trying to control and find security in everything, it keeps you in the prison. But when we allow the release, then we find the blessed assurance of Spirit is with us.
Yeah, maybe a more mundane example would be, I remember Edwin Gaines saying that tithing is putting feet on your faith. It's doing something that promotes your spirit, that promotes the faith in the abundance of the universe. And I know Paul and I both have always felt that, and we both believe that separately. I think it'd be difficult to be with a partner that didn't believe that or didn't have that consciousness, because it is, tithing does give you a sense that you are a part of that larger universe.
It is amazing, because I've consistently tithed now for several decades. I know Wendy does too. And it's the idea that some people say, oh, well, just give a little bit, give what you can. But we choose to give at least 10% of what we earn, what we have. And, it's never a lack. There's never not enough. There's always an abundance of all good. And so the idea of not tithing would be anathema to me right now. It's just part of my willingness to give back to this universe. And it's a wondrous thing, because one amazing situations and abundance flows to that, not just in monetary terms, but in all terms. So I think it's a willingness to say, I'm participating. I'm participating with this, with the nature of flow by offering up this particular part of my giving. You could say everything's a tithe in the sense like you're always giving out money, but there's a particular purpose to a sense of 10% tithe, because that's the consecrated portion that goes purely to spirit with no expectations. So I think that's huge. Don't ever have an expectation about the way it has to return to you, because then we're putting limits on the universe. Just give freely and know that, you know, you will be blessed. And so it's been a wonderful thing. And yeah, it's definitely wonderful that we've never really talked about tithing when we got together. It was just a given. We knew we both tithed, but it's wonderful that we both, I think, are very much in synchronicity around that. And I think if the whole world, you know, discovered that principle, life would dramatically change. I know those institutions that do instill tithing are very blessed institutions. So and individuals as well. So that's all I can say about that one. That definitely works. Wendy, yeah.
Well, I was just looking out the window while Paul was talking, and there was this huge flock of birds that just, did you see them in the sky? There was this huge flock of birds that came in this wonderful pattern that just came by, and then the seagulls were sort of all over the place, and then there was a dragonfly, and it was like the more you talked about tithing and about being in that, but you know, buying into that the source there, it was like more sources came, more beautiful things came across the window.
Right. Yeah, but I like that word participating. You know, we want to be participators in this whole play of life, right? We don't want to just be on the sidelines looking in, but never feeling we're part of it. Participation is a wonderful thing. We're involved, and you can be involved in so many ways. It's not just about doing something for others or whatever. Just being willing to show up. To be there when somebody comes up to you on the beach with a question, or like we had earlier in our journey, dealing with people who were struggling with substance abuse, or looking at the next stage of their lives, you know, and being perturbed by it, you know, being there for those people, and seeing the resonance within ourselves and our own vulnerabilities. But always remembering, and this is the key, I think, always remembering that who I am is limitless, unconditioned. I am that which is free, and I can participate in that presence of being, of life, of love, of possibility, because that is who I am in truth. As we said earlier, it's a natural state.
Talking about disassociating yourself with an identity too, just identifying yourself. You know, I find it interesting, because traveling with Paul, when we've been places and you're in a group of people that you don't know, and somebody says, well, what do you do? And as soon as Paul says they're a minister, they like hightail it, or they clam up, or they have a story, or, you know, it the normal conversation doesn't continue on after that. usually. And so a lot of these people that Paul just talked about had no earthly idea what he does for a living. And there, I think Paul, there is a sense of presence, of being willing to be present, that people identify with on a subconscious level, and that presence is part of an aura, you know, the aura and part of the energy field that people sense on, and they, I think, are attracted to that. They don't have to know he's a minister. It's something that Paul has decided to do in his life, is to show up and to be present and to be open to those possibilities.
In fact, I prefer not to be labeled as a minister sometimes for that very reason, because people go into their ideas about what a minister is supposed to be, behave like, etc., and there's so much baggage that comes with religion. There's a Facebook cartoon going around right now, and it shows a dolphin jumping out of the sea, talking to a man in a boat, and he says, "Excuse me, may I introduce you to my Lord and Savior, Neptune, King of the Sea." And it's meant to be amusing, I guess, you know, a proselytizing dolphin or whatever. But, you know, all self-respecting dolphins that I know are not fundamentalists. You know, they understand this larger sense of the flow of things. And so that gives the lie to that idea that they would want everybody to become, you know, followers of Neptune. But I think they do want us to understand that life is a little bit out of kilter. And somebody else told me the other day that, you know, often dolphins seem to want to communicate with human beings because they're supposed to be very intelligent creatures. I'm sure they have some words of wisdom for us if we would but listen and return to some balance in our world, because otherwise we're going to throw Mother Nature off center, and that can only be bad for us as well. But that's another week's discussion. But I hope you found something in this week's discussion. Next week we'll be celebrating the first birthday of my grandson Narayan, and I'll be interviewing his mom, my daughter Miriam. So that'll be fun. We'll be there with them. And before we head off to a final part of the trip, well, we'll be in an unknown location. We're not sure yet where we're going to be for that final show. What we're going to do in the final show is sort of wrap up all our thoughts that we've had and experiences that we've had during this sabbatical. But I want to hear from a young mother of two next week, so that'll be fun to talk with Miriam.
Well, and to give a little more about Miriam, she grew up in Unity. Paul and Davis, her mom, took her to India when she was three. They backpacked all around Scotland with her. Like I said, grew up in Unity, but she married a gentleman that is of Indian descent and practices Hindu. And so she has a broad understanding of the of two different worlds, should you say, and attracted to two different worlds. She said she's always been attracted to that. So she's a very interesting person spiritually as well as a mama.
Exactly. Yeah, so I think that's going to be an interesting show. I'm going to ask her a little bit about her understanding of Hinduism and how that fits into Unity, because she still comes to our church occasionally and feels connected to the Unity teachings. And I feel very connected to Hinduism myself, so there's a lot of commonalities there. So join us next week for that. In the meantime, we wish you a great week. Have a good time. Thanks for tuning in to World Spirituality, this voice of an awakening world. Let me know what you think at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. Check out my website at pauljohnroach.com. And we'll talk to you soon. All right. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
As human beings, we have been granted quite a bit of power. One of the greatest powers that we have is the power of choice. We can choose to react to situations and to people in any way that we like, and it has tremendous effect on our lives and our world. There is a spiritual law that states, thoughts held in mind will produce after their kind. Simply put, our thoughts can create our worlds. And it's quite possible to change the total direction of our lives by simply changing the way we think, by choosing to see life differently. If you're unhappy with the direction your life is headed, remember, you can change it. You've been given the power of choice. Learn how to choose it wisely.
This message has been brought to you by the Association of Unity Churches International. To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Finding peace wherever you are, even in times of chaos, is a spiritual practice handed down to us by master teachers through the ages. And that's the theme for this year's World Day of Prayer, Finding Peace in the Midst. Join Unity on September 13th and 14th for its 24-hour prayer vigil with ceremonies at Unity Village that will be live-streamed online. Go to worlddayofprayer.org to light a virtual candle or submit names for prayer on this special day.
As human beings, we have been granted quite a bit of power. One of the greatest powers that we have is the power of choice. We can choose to react to situations and to people in any way that we like, and it has tremendous effect on our lives and our world. There is a spiritual law that states, thoughts held in mind will produce after their kind. Simply put, our thoughts can create our worlds. And it's quite possible to change the total direction of our lives by simply changing the way we think, by choosing to see life differently. If you're unhappy with the direction your life is headed, remember, you can change it. You've been given the power of choice. Learn how to choose it wisely.
This message has been brought to you by the Association of Unity Churches International. To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Finding peace wherever you are, even in times of chaos, is a spiritual practice handed down to us by master teachers through the ages. And that's the theme for this year's World Day of Prayer, Finding Peace in the Midst. Join Unity on September 13th and 14th for its 24-hour prayer vigil with ceremonies at Unity Village that will be live-streamed online. Go to worlddayofprayer.org to light a virtual candle or submit names for prayer on this special day.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.